Hi, hi, I'm Dr. Sophia, the medical doctor of the Dermosas and Email Marketing Expert. In here, I take you behind the scenes of failed and successful email marketing campaigns. You get to see what these amazing individuals have tried that worked and did work in email marketing. If you've been curious and like me, you want to know what other people out there are really doing in email marketing, then join me as I go behind the scenes. Hello, listeners, and welcome to Email Marketing Experiment. Today, I have an amazing copywriter and message strategist. She specializes in conversion copy for women-owned businesses, and she serves a predominantly female audience. She has been to 6 continents, and she can scuba dive. Now, I find that pretty amazing. With 5 years of experience and a contributor role at Forbes Advisor, she's going to show us 5 ways you can use to fix your email list when tagging has not been done. Now, we have no other than Elle Juliet with us in the room today. How are you, Elle? It's good to have you.
I'm good, thank you. I'm very excited to be here. Thank you for having me.
You're welcome. Now, I mean, you've traveled to like 6 continents, and that's like almost all of them. And I'm wondering, like, how?
Oh my gosh. I've been traveling for like 10 years. I travel all the time. So I've done a few long backpacking trips around like Asia and South America, which was amazing. But yeah, that's basically my thing. Whenever I have savings, they go on traveling. I would love to go to every single country in the world. I'm working on it. But yeah, I just love to travel, and that's my favorite thing to do.
I love it. Now, you mentioned Asia, and I have to ask, have you been to Korea?
Oh, I haven't, and it's on my bucket list. I actually went to Japan this year, and it's one of the best places I've ever been to. And I only had just 10 days, so I didn't have time to go to Korea as well. But I'm hoping to maybe go this year and definitely next year, because I've just heard such amazing things about South Korea, and I love Japan so much. So they're right next to each other. I would like to go back to Japan for at least a month next time, because there's just so much to do. 10 days was not enough. But yeah, have you been to Korea?
I haven't, but it's one place I know that I would like to visit. So once you mentioned Asia, I was going to ask you, okay, Korea, and we hear so much hype about the food. So that was where my next question would have been directed, if you had been. But that's fine. So before we talk email and go into, you know, all the stuff about list segmentation and tagging, I'd like to ask, what is, you know, one non-work hobby you've been obsessed with lately?
I actually am getting really into photography, which I guess feels random, but it's just something I realized that I really loved last year. I have a basic point and shoot camera, and I'm trying to take lessons. And it's actually something I think I would love to maybe do a degree in the future. But I am really interested in wildlife and travel photography, so I have been spending a lot of time doing that in my free time, which is cool.
Yeah, definitely cool. I mean, when it comes to photography, I remember the time I used to be obsessed with cameras. Now I don't think I even know their names anymore. But that time I was taking a course for a diploma, and then it was like, oh, this kind of camera. And then this aperture, and, you know, all the photography lingua, and, you know, all of those things. And it was really crazy because I was so into it. Sometimes I wonder what happened. But yeah, I think photography is simple. Definitely. So now let's get into the tea of the email marketing segmentation and tagging. I particularly like this topic because I don't think I've had someone come in and break, you know, segmentation and tagging down. And it is one thing in my experience that I have seen that when done rightly, yeah, can help you drive massive results. Sometimes the only difference between the results you want to get and what it is you have currently is the fact that you're not doing segmentation and tagging right. So seeing that you're going to be giving us 5 tips to fix, or 5 ways to fix a list that has been tagged wrong or not tagged at all, I'm super excited. But before we go into that, you know, you've done email marketing, you do it for yourself, you have your email list which you're building, and you've done it for clients. So in your own business, what would you say is the, you know, job description, the role that email marketing plays for you?
Oh, so for me, I use email marketing for three different reasons, and I would recommend clients to do this as well. I use it for community building, of course. I use it to promote and sell my offers, and then I also use it for market research. And all of those things, segmentation and tagging, play a role, especially for market research. But I will use it for community building. So educating my list, sharing valuable information with them, and also sharing stories just to kind of build that connection with my brand. I also use it for market research to find out what my audience is most interested in, what kind of offers I could maybe build out in the future that would be valuable to them. And then I obviously also use it to promote the offers that I currently have. I try not to promote too often, and this obviously does depend on your business and your audience, but I try and stick to this idea of having two nurture emails or educational emails but per sales email, so that you're not selling all the time in every email and just making them feel like you don't care about them as a community. I'm building my list right now, and I'm just trying to focus on making it my main source of marketing, really the central point of marketing for the rest of the year, because obviously as an email marketer, I do think that your email list is probably the most valuable form of thing that you can have in your funnel. Every single person who's on your email list has asked to be there. They've all told you that they're interested in you, whereas on social media, sometimes you're kind of just posting into the void and hoping that it works. So yeah, it has a huge role in my business. I use it for so many different things. I can't recommend anyone who's listening enough, please have an email list. It's so valuable and it's free like to have.
Yeah, definitely. And I love the diversity in how you use it. It's so many different things. So first of all, I sent out an email on Monday and I'm like, I'm going to tell you what I'm building on Friday. Then I sent out an email Saturday and I'm like, apologies, this is the reason why I didn't meet Friday, you know, because of procrastination and, you know, a habit I'm trying to solve. And then I'm like, I'm creating this guide for you. Which of these names do you prefer? What would you like to see in it? And then, you know, I get the reply that says, oh, I can totally relate. We all struggle with procrastination. And it just felt so refreshing. Aside from the fact that, you know, I got like the person's preference and an extra thing that I could add to the guide I'm building, right? It was just relatable on both sides. So I totally see how email marketing can come in with the research, with the, you know, relationship and community building and lots more. Now, you have a lot of amazing case studies on your website, I must say. And guys, if you want to see it, you just need to head over to her website. The link will be in the show notes to see it, ljulietcopyandmarketing.com all together. The link will be in the show notes. She has some pretty amazing case studies. And, you know, I was just looking through and I have to ask, what has been your favorite email project so far?
Oh, I have two. I know that's not your question, but I worked as an email marketer for a year with a LinkedIn consulting firm. And I loved that project because the person I was working with who owned the business was really open to experimentation, which sometimes I find that that doesn't always happen with clients and they're a little bit worried about trying new things. They don't want to alienate their list. They don't know what's going to happen. But obviously being able to test new things and do things like A/B testing on different campaigns can get you really interesting results. You can learn so much about your audience. And I have worked on campaigns before where we have tried the craziest things that you would never think would lead to conversions and then found out that like that list just loves and we can talk about those kind of stories later, but like being able to experiment and really try different things to up those conversion rates made a huge difference. And we really, really like we doubled the conversion rates on both click-throughs and open rates during that year that I was working with them. The other campaign that I worked on that I loved, a lot of it was because of the client I worked with. It's probably my favorite client I've ever worked with. So she has both a coaching and consulting business for female business owners. And she also has a luxury gift giving business. And it was really interesting to work on the gift boxes because she has these gift boxes that people can buy and send out. Every single thing in the gift box is made by a locally owned women's business. So that was just a fun, very aligned project to work on because it was really in my niche. And then she was launching a campaign at the same time for her consulting business. And that was really exciting to work on because she had such an exciting, strong vision for what she wanted. So actually building out the email strategy for that it's just nice when you're working on a project where people, they have their messaging down, they know exactly what they want, and you're just kind of working, collaborating with them on strategy. But it was also just because I loved working with her. We're still really good friends now, and she's just such a nice person.
I love it. I love it. And yes, to what you said, you know, working with a brand that just has everything you need already present just makes your life so much more easier. Now, let's take a look at your journey into email marketing. You know, I understand that when you started at the beginning, you weren't necessarily doing email marketing. You know, you were doing some other things and made a pivot. You know, can you tell us about, you know, going from that to generalist and then, you know, niching down to women-owned businesses?
Yeah, so I actually started out doing articles and blog posts. So I was writing for businesses like Forbes Advisor, which I'm still a small business contributor at, Linktree. And I ended up having a couple of clients who I had written blog posts and articles for who asked me if I could do their web copy. I said yes. Realized that I really, really loved copywriting. So I started doing more of that and taking trainings in that. And I then ended up being subcontracted with a email marketing agency. And that's how I got into email marketing. So I worked with them for about a year, mostly writing copy for campaigns. And at the same time, I was taking trainings like 10x emails from Copy Hackers. And it was really almost like a paid internship. Like I was just learning on the job. I was testing out all of these different campaigns. They were across different niches as well, which was really interesting. And after about a year of that, I started doing my own email marketing with my own clients. And that's how I got into email marketing. It wasn't really until 2024 that I transitioned into working with women-only businesses. And it's not because I don't like working with men. I have worked with male clients that I love. I just wanted to work on brands that were a little bit more fun for me. And I just love working on like girly brands. And I love working with women. So it just felt like time to niche down and specialize a bit.
Yeah, that's amazing. I mean, if it works for you, if it's where you see yourself transitioning to, then of course, go for it. And I love the fact that, you know, you found something aligned. You found something that was what you really loved and you went for it. So, you know, like I said earlier, you have like amazing case studies and all with interesting stories. And you also have a unique way of using email marketing for, you know, research, segmentation, tagging. So I'm just wondering, can you walk us through, or at what point did you realize that, you know, segmentation or not segmenting properly, right, can be a problem, or that segmentation and tagging is actually important?
I think I always knew that segmentation and tagging was important, because when I was doing training into email marketing, I'm a conversion copywriter, and I was trained with Copy Hackers. And for people who are not familiar with the term conversion copywriting, it is essentially we use data just as much as we use creativity, which means that we don't just write copy based on like, does it sound good? Do we think it's going to work? We will use data to measure with like a hypothesis, numbers, and a messaging hierarchy, whether or not something is likely to convert. And everything is really based on testing. And so I always knew that segmentation and tagging were going to be important for my own campaigns I worked on, because that is how you test and you measure and you optimize something using data. And the first time I think I saw it on an email campaign I was working with is when I signed on to do email marketing with this LinkedIn consulting firm. They had never really done segmentation on that list. And there was a lot of people on the list. I think there was over 5,000 people, and they'd been growing it for a few years. And there just was no logic behind how people were segmented, how they were tagged. We didn't know who was on the list. We didn't know why they had joined. And because this business, it had multiple offers and they were all slightly different. If you don't know who's on your list, you don't know who's the best fit for offers. And so that was a really good wake-up call for me when I first started working with them, that I was like, oh, this is a problem. And until we fix this, we're just not going to get the conversion rates that we need to.
Oh, yes. That's so important, especially the last part of what you said, because there's this thing I believe in, and I think it's a popular email marketing mantra as well. So, you know, sending the right email to the right person at the right time. right? So if you don't even know who the right person for your email is, you can't even go on to the next step to think of maybe sending it at the right time or, you know, at the right point in their customer journey. So that sounds like a lot of chaos that you landed into, because now there wasn't even a reference point for you to say, you know, this is point A, this is point B. So what did you do next? How did you tackle this, you know, challenging, unorganized email list?
I think the first thing I would say is it wasn't necessarily scary to me in the sense that, like, it's nice when you go into something and you're like, I know what the problem is, because at least at that point I was like, I know why the conversions haven't been doing well. I know why there's not very, like, a lot of click-throughs and they're not getting the sales that they should be. It's just about how do we solve that. And so if a list has never been tagged or segmented, there are things that you can do. Obviously, best case scenario is you do it at the start. But what I then went in and started doing was sending out emails that had different links that they could click for the different offers. Sometimes I would send out polls or quizzes. And it's just about basically trying to use like how people are clicking, but also how they're opening emails, and A/B testing that to start to break down who's interested in what offer. And I think the first place that you should start if your list has never been segmented is which offers or which topics that you talk about are they going to be interested in, and then start sending out emails or campaigns that will help you tag people based on that. And so with this email list specifically, we were launching a podcast and a YouTube channel. And so I basically split out the videos that we were doing, the podcast episodes that we were doing based on topic and what was being talked about in that. And then also sometimes I would send out educational emails or story emails, but I mapped out the different topics that we had offers to match. So for example, like we had an ebook about growing your LinkedIn. We also had consulting for like Sales Navigator. So I mapped out the different things that people would maybe be interested in, wrote emails that were specific to that topic with an open, a subject line that was specific to that topic. And if people open those emails, I can then tag them interested in this. And they go in that segment and that list to be like, this is the kind of people that we should be marketing this specific offer to. And it's just basically about then building out a strategic plan as you go forward of how do you use the emails that you're sending and the topics that you're talking about to find out who's on your list and what they're interested in.
I love it. And I see that you reverse engineered the offer. So you went from offer and then took, you know, went steps back to like the starting point. So it's like you're at point Z where you know that this is the offer that they will ultimately want. So how can you get to the beginning of their journey to this offer? And then you went from offer to topics. And then you use, you know, fun and interesting ways in terms of like quizzes, polls, and the messaging generally to get people to click, right? And then that way you were segmented. Now I have to ask, you mentioned A/B testing. So we have some people who are new to email marketing, some people who are into email marketing, but not very techy. And they might be wondering, when you say A/B testing in this context, right? What exactly are you referring to? What exactly do you mean?
Yes. So A/B testing is when you send out a different version of the email to different parts of your audience. And so what that can look like is, for example, if you're sending, and I would only ever recommend changing one thing at the time, because otherwise it's pointless. So you change one thing in your email, you could test a subject line. And so that would look like you send an email to your list, but you're not sure what kind of subject lines do they respond well to? Like, do they respond well to an open loop subject line or a curiosity subject line or a benefit-driven value prop subject line? And so what you would then do is you write two subject lines. 50% of your list gets one, 50% of your list gets another. And then based on which one gets the highest open rates, you would then make a note that that's the subject line that performs the best. You can also, if you have a big enough list, you can actually A/B test by just sending the emails to a small segment of your list. So say our list was 5,000 people, you could send the email to 500 people and your email marketing software might send it for, you know, maybe 6 or 7 hours. And then depending on which gets the highest open rates, the other 4,500 people get that subject line. And the reason we do this is just because obviously you want the most people possible to open your emails. So if you can test and see which, based on like the data, which subject line has the highest chance of being open, you can then send the best possible subject line instead of just choosing a subject line and being like, oh, well, I hope that this one works. I think it's okay. You can actually use A/B testing to be like, I know that this is the most likely thing to convert based on the data. So that's a really valuable way of doing that. And you could also test this on things like the CTAs or the links that you have in your emails. You could test to see which one is most likely to get clicks, which topics people are most interested in. And it's just a really good way of using the capabilities of your software to send people better emails, basically.
That's good. That's good. And I like that we are talking about, you know, this kind of, you know, using people's behavior to be able to, you know, tag them based on like interest, tag them into different buckets so that you know who is interested in what. Now, I want to ask, beyond their interest, which was one of the things you mentioned, so using their interest to tag them based on topics, were there other ways you were also looking at tagging? And were there other methods you had tried to use to tag people previously in the past that maybe didn't quite work well?
So in answer to the first question, the three things that I would always recommend looking at for tagging and segmentation is behavior. So what we were just talking about, how do they interact with your emails? Which offers are they interested in? What do they click on? The second thing that I would tag people based on is lead gen source. That is something you should be doing from the start. It's so important. And that's how did they join your list? You need to know whether or not they joined your list from your subscriber form. Did they join it from a freebie? Did they join it from a podcast episode or from a webinar that you ran? Because based on what your copy or your marketing is for that specific lead gen source, that helps you understand what they care about and what about your brand interests you. And so an example I would give is, say, if somebody just joins your newsletter, it's a little bit harder unless you do a productized newsletter, and that could be a whole other episode. You might be just like, okay, they're just interested in like general advice or whatever. But if you run a webinar, say you're a LinkedIn consultant and you run a webinar like how to get leads with Sales Navigator, they join your email list from that. And then you have an ebook on Sales Navigator. You can add them to potentially interested in the ebook, and you know that you can market that offer to them and it might be interesting to them. The other type of behavior that's a little bit different than just what they're interested in that I would also recommend tagging people on is what they click on in terms of stage awareness with buying. And so this could be things like if you have a sale and you notice that they always click on the sale, you could tag them as price point being an issue for them. You know that there's somebody who struggles maybe with higher ticket offers, that maybe they're on a budget, but you can offer them like you have a $10 ebook that might work really well for them. Or if they're always going to the sales page, but they don't click through, you can tag them as being like interested, but not ready to buy, which means that you might want to send them emails that counter objections that you've seen other people have in the past with that specific offer of going from being high stage of awareness to actually being a buyer. Your other question was,
are there methods you have tried to use to segment in the past that didn't quite work?
I think everyone does sometimes segment things that don't matter. I think, for example, like it's common for people to segment based on time zone, which it's not actually that valuable, or like demographics, sometimes like which country they're coming from. I'm trying to think if there's anything I have used that I don't think has been helpful. I don't think so, because I think up until now, I really just try and stick to those three things of like behavior and lead gen, because I know that in terms of actually like taking people through that buyer journey, that's what matters. But yeah, I think what I would say in terms of tagging and like, when is it helpful and when isn't, it matters when it matters. And if you can't justify why you're creating a segment or a tag, just don't do it, because you can have too many tags and too many segments and you're just going to confuse yourself. And there's one of my favorite quotes with just in terms of marketing and copywriting, and I actually can't remember who said it, which is really bad, but it is paraphrasing, no one buys the New York Times because they're 30 and they live in New York. Like, people buy the New York Times for what they can get from the product. So say you were saying that if you tagged people of being like, this person is 30, how does that then actually help you market it? Or if you were like, this is a woman, like, yes, it can help you a bit, but it actually doesn't matter that much because that's not how people make buying decisions. So tag people based on things that will actually help you help them, like get them the product that they need, get them the information that they need. Don't just tag them randomly because not all information is helpful. So if you can't explain why you're doing it, just don't do it. Like, if that makes sense.
Definitely, definitely. And you know, you were saying something about, you know, like if you're running a newsletter, and it's really interesting that you can, even with a newsletter, still segment. So as you said it, I just remember that with a platform like Substack, for example, when you go through your data at the back end, they actually give you based on source, but the source is different. So it's not source based on webinar lead magnet. It's more of like source based on, did this person come from LinkedIn, or was it a direct link click, or was it from like the Substack network or Threads, right? And that's something that can actually still help you, because you now know which platform is driving the most traffic for your newsletter. And then maybe if you were actually doing something on that platform, you know, to do like more of it, right? So you can't also group the people in the list based on source, but you can actually use that data to make a lot of informed decisions. Then, you know, you talked about clicking to the website, and it's interesting because I usually do that. So there's a program I run like once a year, my mentorship program. And I think that's the time that I'm most intentional about the, you click the website, you don't, you know, go ahead to make a purchase, and then I attach a tag. So if you're clicking the website multiple times, it just, you know, like beeps me that there's something that's still holding you back because you keep checking it out. If you're checking it out with almost every email I'm sending, but you're not making any purchases, like, what's stopping you? So that's like one really important one that I know that I have implemented in the past, especially during launches anyways. But recently I was thinking about it, and what I wanted to use it for was like my courses. So the course is always open, but if you have clicked the link, right, and you don't go ahead to make a purchase, then we can not just tag you, but even go a step further to set up like an automated email to just do like a follow-up off the email that you actually receive. And it's so amazing the number of things you can do and the amount of errands you can send your emails on once you begin to tag people, right? Now, you mentioned tagging in terms of lead gen, source, in terms of behavior, and then the last one in terms of, how did you phrase it now, what it is you want them to do, or something like that. I think I mixed it up a bit, but there are three.
Yeah, it's like buying decisions. So specifically their stage of awareness.
All right, and stage of awareness. Now, there's another popular tagging method, which is the one that I think I talk about a whole lot. Even though I tell people that, okay, so you can segment people based on, and yes, sometimes I do talk about demographics.
It, like, this is the thing. It matters when it matters. Sometimes it does matter. So for example, if you saw that like no one clicks on you from LinkedIn, no one is joining from Substack, but everyone is coming from like TikTok, you might be like, oh, I could use younger language in my emails. I could use more slang. I could get like funny with my, I could add memes. Do you know what I mean? Like, if you understand that the majority of your demographic is young people and that's important to your branding, you might be like, okay, I can actually use a different brand voice. But it matters when it matters. So don't ever take anything as being like a rule. Learn the rules and break them.
I love that. It matters when it matters. But I think the one I particularly like is when it comes to behavior and, you know, psychology, which still it ties into, you know, their buying journey and their interest. But then the one I usually will talk about will be in terms of the RFM method. When we are talking about like recency, maybe how recently they joined your email list, as opposed to if they've been there longer or, you know, for a longer time or a shorter time, frequency. So how often they take particular actions could be engagement-wise, buying-wise. And then, you know, monetary, which looks into if they've bought, when last they bought, how often they've bought, and things like that. And I'd like to know, you know, what you think about this other method of segmentation and tagging as well.
I think that's really important and something that I think is useful to note. A lot of email marketing platforms, you can actually set them up to do that automatically for you. They can set those tags up so you don't even need to keep tabs on it. And I think that that's really helpful, not just for like understanding whether or not maybe you need to re-engage someone or retarget them, but also when you're cleaning up your list. And that's something else I would say is don't be afraid to take people off your list, because it's better for you to have a small list that is highly engaged than a big list where most people don't open your emails, because that like that affects your sender reputation and everything. So yeah, like that's definitely a really good method to see if people are still interested in your offers, if they're likely to buy, or if somebody is basically, maybe all of your emails are going to spam. They haven't opened your emails in 6 months. They don't necessarily need to stay on your list. And you can then put them in a retargeting or a re-engagement sequence where you're like, hey, you haven't opened these emails for a really long time. Do you still want to be here? It is better for you to have someone unsubscribe and be like, actually, no, I hate these emails. I'm leaving. Then have someone who just doesn't open them, you know?
Yeah, very important. I like to tell people that don't attach a lot of emotion to the unsubscribe, because it saves you time, energy, and cost. And it doesn't necessarily mean you were doing something bad. It could just be the fact that the person has outgrown your emails, that they came in for something, they have solved that issue, and they are moving on. It could also be that it's no longer their style, or they just, you know, plainly don't like it, really. No hard feelings, but it's fine.
100%. And also, they're not going to buy from you. Like, if they're unsubscribing, they were never going to buy from you in the first place. And I think we can get into this weird thing sometimes of forgetting that, like, you are a business owner. It's okay for you to sell things. Like, it's your job. You're not doing anything wrong by trying to sell to people on your email list. And sometimes people, I think they feel embarrassed that they're like, oh, I should just use it for community building. But I'm like, you're allowed to sell on your list. And if people are not going to buy from you, they don't need to be on the list. Like, and you don't need to be upset when they leave the list, because you're allowed to want sales as a business owner. That's okay. And so if someone is on your list and they leave, they were never going to buy from you anyway. They were just getting free education from you, but you're not going to get anything back. Like, it's better for them to leave, and don't feel bad about it, because they weren't helping you run your business. And like, at the end of the day, build a community, but you still are running a business.
True. And the business needs to be profitable at the end of the day, because you would pay for your software when it starts growing beyond the 1,000s and things like that. So That's a lot of things to think about. Yeah. So let's look back at this brand that, you know, we were talking about. And then with having to take what they had and reorganize it, and, you know, actually build out that process where you're sending emails, people are clicking, and, you know, you're beginning to segment them. How long would you say that this process took from, you know, start to finish?
I would say it probably took about 2 months before the list started feeling clean. I mean, we did start getting better open rates within the end of the first month. But this is also a list where we were sending 3 emails a week. So I know that most people are not sending emails that frequently, but that was something we wanted to do. One, because we wanted to promote multiple things, and we wanted to have that balance of promoting educational material as well as having one sales email a week that was maybe storytelling and then selling through that, but still was promoting one of the offers. And then we wanted to have one email a week that would promote the YouTube, which is an educational resource, and one email a week that promoted the podcast. And also because there was one podcast episode every week, that was something that they were really, really pushing. So there was just a lot of different things that we needed to deal with. And then the second reason that we wanted to send one every week was so that we could clean up this list and get as much data as possible. So if you're not running an email every single, like 3 times a week, you might not see results as quickly because it will take a while for you to collect enough data to start tagging and segmenting people. For us, it took about 2 months, I would say, until the list was in a really good place in terms of we knew what people were interested in. We knew who wasn't engaging with the emails, who didn't care, who wanted a low ticket offer, things like that. And I would say it probably took about 3 or 4 months for us to double the conversion rates from where they were before.
I like that you have the time frame for each of these steps. Now, so let's circle back to, you know, our topic for today. We have gone through this process. We have seen how it is you want, you know, you went through this particular process and, you know, step by step. Now, if someone is to ask you today, so what are the 5 steps to fixing a list that, you know, was not tagged properly? Can you, you know, itemize it for our listeners?
Yeah. So I'd say step one, audit your list. You have to start by understanding where the problems are, what's going wrong, what your actual list looks like at that point in time. The second step would be to then build out a strategy. And so, like I said, that can be reverse engineering your offers. And I would say before you start doing anything or sending out emails with any sort of like quizzes or anything like that, you need to sit down and create a strategy that marks out, like, what do you want from this list? Which offers are you trying to map out and figure out how can you get to that place? Like, do you need to run webinars on a specific topic to find out if people are interested in like one topic that your offers will cover or things like that? Then the third step I would say is actually start sending out those emails where you actually do get to tag and segment people. So that could be either sending out emails with a subject line that is specifically related to an offer that you want to market, and then being like, okay, 50%, like maybe 50% of people opened it, or like 20% of people clicked on this. We're now going to tag them interested in this offer. The next step that I would say is then start putting together a strategy for quizzes or polls. Or, and this is another strategy that I'm going to give you, let me just explain quizzes and polls. So quizzes and polls is like a lot of email marketing platforms will let you actually insert a quiz or a poll where people can vote, where you can actually just ask them inside the email, which of these topics are you most interested in? And they can choose that number from there. So they could choose an answer. They might say like, I'm most interested in Sales Navigator. And then you can just tag them. And usually you can actually connect your email marketing platform to tag them directly from that. But the other thing that you can try and do, and this is what I did with this client when it was really messy, you can actually add a link or a set of CTAs at the bottom of your email. So every single email, what we would do is under the end of the email, like where you would have PS, something, 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 we would say, here are 5 other ways I can help you. And then we would say, I have a YouTube where I talk about X, Y, and Z. I have a podcast where I talk about X, Y, Z. I have an ebook where I teach this. I have a mini course where I teach this. Or I have full consultations where I do this. They all talked about different offers and different topics. And all of those, if they were clicked on, would segment people. And that just means that in every single email that you're sending, if you have this in every single email, you potentially can segment people every single time. And just the more you can add those links to segment people, the cleaner your list will get as time goes on. And then the 5th thing that I would then suggest doing is once you're starting to segment people, I think I would say 2 things, clean up the list and then go through who is engaged, who isn't engaged, and take out people who are not opening the emails. Because if there's people in there that like they're not segmented, they're not tagged, and they're not engaging, you're not able to then segment them because they're not clicking on any of the links. You're never going to understand, and you can't really market to people unless you know why you're in the list. The 2nd thing that I would suggest, although this could also go with the first stage, is once you have figured out what works, you have your strategy, and you know what to do with people, then set up workflows or automations that will tag people correctly going forward. And so obviously, from the start, you want to do that. And initially, I would say when you set up an email marketing strategy, tag people correctly from the start. Just the earlier you do it, the better it is. But once you've gotten to a point where you've cleaned up your list and you can identify what people care about, you can then put a lead gen strategy moving forward that you can decide, I know many people in this list, like everyone cares about Sales Navigator. I will now run a webinar in 3 weeks for Sales Navigator and promote that. I will promote it to my current list, and anyone who clicks on that link is going in that segment. And then I will also promote it to people outside who enter a workflow that automatically tags them and puts them in that list. And then from that point moving onwards, most of the people in your list now are segmented or tagged, so you can work with that. And then everyone new coming into your list will be correctly segmented or tagged moving forward. And you can just move past the mess and go forward with a good strategy.
And a very clean and organized list. That's the screen. I mean, you can finally breathe. All right. So I was going to ask, now you have like 5 options for them to click. What if somebody is clicking like 2 to 3 different options?
You can put them in more than one segment. People don't have to just be in one segment. If somebody is interested in multiple offers, then like you can market all of the offers to them. Don't get too hung up and be like, I have to have them in a specific segment. The more you know about them, the better. But there might be people, like as a copywriter, for example, I could add something that says like, are you interested in web copy? Are you interested in email marketing? Are you interested in sales funnels? Somebody might click all 3 of those, but I have people who hire me for all 3. Like I have people who, if they hire me for a funnel, they might say, hey, could you set up my opt-in page, my sales page, and email marketing campaigns? They are interested in multiple offers. So if they're clicking in multiple things, just tag them in all 3. The more you can learn about someone, the better, but somebody might be in multiple segments, and that's okay too, because you're still learning something about them that helps you not just market offers, but also provide better value to them. You know, so they might be interested if you send out an educational email about how to write an about page, that could help them. But you could also write an email about how to set up a welcome campaign, and that's also valuable to them. So just give them both.
Yeah, very important. So now once you had like your segmentation, your tagging done, you mentioned that it took about, I think, 4 months to double your conversions. But aside doubling your conversions, I'm curious, what other kind of results did you see once you started, you know, getting that whole process started?
More sales and more click-throughs, definitely. So we went from, I think there was like, basically no sales on the ebook for a long time to actually getting like at least a few sales every single month. We also had a lot more success when we would do sales campaigns. So I know that there was one campaign we did on the course where there was a small discount, and we were able to set up really effective retargeting emails with people that we knew were interested. And actually, that's the highest numbers I've ever gotten. We had a retargeting email for people who were interested in the course but hadn't bought. We ended up getting a 90% open rate and a 75% click through. And I think that we had like 5 or 10 sales, and this was a high ticket course, so that was a good ROI from that retargeting email. So more sales, definitely more engagement in the list, and then also more engagement for things like YouTube and podcast episodes. We were able to grow the YouTube channel quite quickly because whenever we would have a YouTube video launch, we knew exactly which people would be the most interested in that. So yeah, you're just like most likely when you tag in segment, better sales, better conversions, better engagement.
That's good. Now, before we go into the next set of questions and we wrap up, I need to let you know you have gotten so many actionable steps just by listening to Elle share her experience of what she did. She actually has an email list where she shares email marketing tips weekly. Am I correct? It's weekly.
Yeah, we could do another episode on this because this is a whole thing. I follow the methodology of having a productized email list, which means that instead of just having an email list where you're like, hey, join my email list, I have tips, you have a specific thing that you can guarantee people will get from the email. And it's almost like it's a product in itself. And so my emails, I just want to make sure they're very valuable to people. And every week they get something that is useful. So every single week at the end of an email, I will share one email marketing or copywriting tip. And what it is I will break down something I did in the last email and explain to people why I did that and what it looks like in action. So yeah, that's my thing. If you join my email list, you are guaranteed to get one piece of value every single week.
And it's definitely coming up in another episode because she just brought in a whole other topic that is a whole lot of things to unpack. So we'll be back in the future, definitely, with this particular one. But for now, ensure you join her email list and be on the lookout for, you know, value. And it's coming from years of experience. So not just, you know, she's saying it. She's telling you what she's done, what has worked, what hasn't worked, and more. Right. So now you talked about some crazy things that you did not expect when you were trying out, you know, like different experiments. And I know that we just had to touch on those because I've been thinking about it, like, what could be the crazy things that you tried that you did not expect that actually worked? So maybe if you could tell us a bit about those, or maybe one or two.
So the craziest one I think I had, we at the email marketing agency, we ended up working with this like science company that sold science equipment. And you would think that that email list, everybody would be very professional. It would be really like dry and boring. They did not like boring emails or professional emails. They just wouldn't respond to them. The emails that they loved were memes. And every single, I think it was every single week that we would send them an email, we would take a different meme that was trending on the internet and just turn that into like a science joke. And that would be most of the email. And then underneath, they'd be like, also, by the way, we have a sale on X, Y, and Z if you're interested. People loved them. They loved them. And it was just, I guess that makes sense to me because the science community, they kind of are nerdy and they like, they love that kind of stuff. But it's just, it goes to show that something I also say in terms of copywriting in general, you don't have to stick with what's normal in your industry. Sometimes going the complete opposite of what's expected in your industry or your niche can perform really well. And if you work in an industry that's normally really boring, that people expect to be like, very professional, and you completely flip that on its head and you're really funny, sometimes that can work really, really well for conversions. And also people do want to read emails that are fun. They don't want to read something boring. But yeah, that was, I never expected those kind of emails to perform well with that audience, but they loved it. They really did.
That's what matters most. All right. So let's get your opinion on these particular things. I mean, there have been debates in the industry concerning, you know, some of these things. So first of all, should a new subscriber finish the welcome sequence before they start receiving regular newsletters, or is it better to send a mix of both from the start?
I think it depends. I think it's fine for them to get added to the regular newsletters if you have explained to them what's going to happen in your welcome sequence. And what I mean by that is, if you don't want to overwhelm people with too many emails at once, or they are like confused that they're getting an email every single day, or like two emails a day because they get a welcome email and then the regular email, I always recommend explaining to your subscribers in the first email they get what cadence to expect. Because I think for a lot of people, it's just the unknown of when they get two emails in a day, they're like, oh my God, is this going to be for the rest of the year? If you explain to them, you're like, hey, you're like going to get a couple of emails from me first or in the next week that will explain like a little bit about me, what I do, what I offer, how I can help you. And I send out emails every Tuesday, so you can expect the first email next Tuesday. Then that's fine. I think if you don't tell them what to expect in your welcome email sequence, wait until the welcome sequence is finished to send the first one.
That's such powerful advice right there. So where do you stand? Double opt-in or single opt-in?
Double opt-in. Oh my God. Double opt-in every time. And I will say to people, take this seriously. I actually used to live in France. So I did a course on GDPR because I was very worried about that for my business. And if you live in Europe, you have to follow the rules, like 100%. You can get sued or like find so much money if you do not double opt in, because not all email marketing platforms, which is an issue in itself that they need to deal with, they don't always include a privacy tick. And so if you don't have a checkbox that asks people for explicit consent, which means that they say, yes, I want to receive marketing emails, and they tick that box and they read the privacy policy, you need legally to have a double opt-in. Otherwise, you can get sued. And you don't want to get sued for that, because it's such an easy thing. It's also a good way, I think, for you as well to measure whether or not that is going to be a valuable subscriber. Again, you do not want people on your list who don't want to be there, because it's a waste of money for you. It's going to drag down your open rates and your sender reputation. If somebody isn't willing to click the double opt-in, they're not going to be a very engaged like person, because they don't care enough to be on. Do you know what I mean? If they don't care enough to double opt-in, they probably don't care enough to get your email. So 100%, please do it every single time. It is such an easy way to protect your business legally, but it is really important.
You know, I once heard somebody give this advice on a podcast that if people don't double opt-in, go ahead and still add them to your email list. And in my head, I'm like, so why do you think that they were asked to double opt-in? She believes that if they don't double opt-in, give them some time, then still add them to your email list because they probably forgot. And I'm like, okay.
I wouldn't recommend it. Something else that I can tell you that is going to blow people's minds, you actually... technically, if somebody comes from Europe, you can't send them marketing emails if they come from your freebie, if they haven't agreed to get marketing emails separately. And like, this is, again, a whole other conversation. But in Europe, GDPR, it's something called, It's something consent. It's not implied consent. It's like complicit consent, which means that they have to agree specifically to every single email you send them. And so if you say to them, you can have this freebie, do you agree to give me your email? And they say yes, but then you start sending them marketing emails, they did not agree to get marketing emails. They agreed that you could send them a freebie. And that is something that double opt-in can kind of help with, but it's still technically not the same thing. And so a lot of people, they don't ask people for permission to send marketing emails. They just send the freebie because they don't know, right? And that's why I would always recommend having a productized email list and using that to get people on your email list over freebies. Because if you're using like a freebie or a webinar to get people on your list, but you're not asking them to tick a box saying, I agree to get marketing emails, you're not really supposed to email them. But for me, for example, everyone who joins my list right now, they are agreeing to get the weekly marketing emails because there's value in every single email. So they're like, yeah, of course I agree to that. And that's just a little thing to say. Like, GDPR, unfortunately, is a lot more complicated than most people realize. But there's something to be aware of and take seriously.
Yeah, definitely. I think a lot of people need to start learning about it, compliance, and how it actually affects their email deliverability and what it is that they can get sued for. Because, I mean, ignorance would not be an excuse. So, yes, thank you so much for, you know, just doing a little deep dive into that. And I think I would ask this one. So, your email list is weekly. However, email daily, weekly, or just when you feel like, what's your advice?
I think it is better to have a schedule. I will be really honest right now. I haven't decided on the day of the week. I am kind of just sending them whenever I have time right now, because I have a lot of stuff going on, but I am trying to build out a content plan. I think this is something we do all the time where like I have great client advice, but I don't always follow it myself because I don't have the time. But based on my own experience right now, sometimes that's really overwhelming and I'm like, oh no, like I have to send something, I have to think of it. So I would always recommend having a content plan, one specific day of the week or of the month that you send your emails, so that you can set up that expectation for people on your list. They know when to look for your emails. They know when to expect them, because a lot of people, they don't like the fear of the unknown. So if you can let them know when they're going to get those emails, it's better for them, but it's also better for you because you can organize yourself ahead of time and you can also automate the workflows. You can automate the emails ahead of time to make sure that you never miss one or that you're not left trying to think of something to say every single week, you know?
Definitely, definitely. Now, you've tried out a lot of email tests, right? So what would you say has been your favorite email test so far?
I actually think that adding the links on that email that I sent out where we had the 5 different options people can pick, because it was the same in every email. So we only had to write it once and it was done. And I actually think we got so much data from that. I think also testing subject lines is something I really like to do, because I know from speaking to other email marketers as well, is you can have some lists that there is one specific framework for a subject line that really works well on them. So I think testing subject lines to find out what frameworks you can use that will get people to open your emails is probably one of the most valuable things that you can do, because that is a really hard part of, I think, emails, is how do you get them noticed in your inbox and how do you guarantee people are going to open them? You can't, but you can get higher open rates and you can have a strategy that, you know, you think that that's going to work best. So yeah, testing subject lines and things that you can test, like I said, with frameworks, is things like if you use a open loop, which is a curiosity subject line of like you start telling a story and they're like, oh, I have to open the email to hear the rest of this. Do they respond well to that? Or if you are, I actually have noticed for my email list, they really like benefit-driven subject lines where if I tell them like, you will learn this in this email, and that's basically the subject line of like how to do this, how to do this. Like I had one that had, because my email list is small at the moment, it was like a 90% open rate, but that's because like if I had like 10,000 people, it would be lower. But my subject line was just how to get people to open your emails. And then it was an email about subject lines. And there was a 90% open rate because people were like, yeah, that's, I know what I'm going to get. I know how this is valuable and I need this. And they open that. So I think testing that kind of stuff to see how do you speak to your audience and what do they care about.
Yeah, very important. And I must, you know, just lend my voice to this thing about subject line frameworks for different lists. Because usually when we work with clients, one of the things we do for those that we have on retainers is like monthly analysis. And so one of the things we actually analyze is look at the emails that performed well and then break it down into frameworks. And then the ones that didn't quite perform well. And so for one of our clients, we realized that she was in the financial space. We realized that when we sent emails that had recent events or financial events intertwined in the subject line, they actually really loved those. And it was something that we wouldn't have known if we didn't take our time to just do that analysis and look at the framework. Now, that might not be something that will actually work for another list, but for her list in particular, you know, it just worked so well. Oh, the 2008 days, you know, and I was actually pretty amazed because I didn't even see that coming. So yes to actually looking and testing and seeing what works, definitely.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it has been such an amazing joy to have you here. I mean, you have taken us from segmentation and tagging to GDPR and compliance to testing different things. And it has been such a refreshing conversation. I'm sure our listeners have a lot of actionable steps to take from this, including the step-by-step on how to fix the 5 things you need to do to fix your email list if it has not been tagged. Now, I want our listeners to be able to find you online. So where can they find you in the online space?
Email list, which I think you're tagging from this episode. And it's also going to be linked on my website. I have a website and I am setting up a blog on that. I have a Substack, which doesn't really talk about emails, though I will say that right now. I haven't talked about email marketing that much on there. So if you're interested in email marketing, Substack might not be for you. If you're interested in copywriting and like brand voice, then that's better. I also am on LinkedIn, I'm on Threads, I'm on Instagram, and you can find all of those on my email signup form or on my website that are linked.
Definitely. And I'm going to be putting all of those links in the show notes so that you can just connect with Elle, get on her newsletter. And let me tell you, you better get on that Substack, because I've been following this challenge that she's currently doing, where she's sharing every day one new client acquisition method. Some of them are really interesting. Some of them are conventional. Others a bit different than what you would normally use. But what I also really love is the fact that she's carrying us along the journey. It's like, okay, I did this and then I got this result from this other one. And, you know, the client said this. And just reading through that, If you also want to know more about client acquisition, which you can use in your email marketing as well, right? You should definitely check out her Substack in addition to the other things she has said. So it has been super amazing to have you here, Elle. Thank you so much for joining us on the show. And guys, don't forget to, you know, follow her on socials, comment, follow, and share this particular episode so more people get to learn all about email marketing. This is Email Marketing Experiments. Until next time, think it, test it, and share it. Have a great rest of your day, Elle.
Thanks so much.